The headlines: Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei urges officials to seriously address water shortage problems in the southwestern Khuzestan province, warning people against enemy's plots under such conditions. Mass evacuations are underway in central China as floods and bad weather conditions affect millions of people. And the 2020 Olympic Games are officially opened at the Japan National Stadium as protesters in Tokyo called for cancellation of the event. Hello and welcome, everybody. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has called on officials to seriously address water shortage problems in the southwestern province of Khuzestan. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the people of Khuzestan would not have faced such problems if authorities had taken into account previous advices. The problem of water shortage is not a minor issue, and they have the right to be dismayed. But he called on the people to be cautious, given that the enemy is after misusing this situation against their interests and that of the Islamic Revolution. The leader made the comments after he received the second dose of domestically produced Coviron Barakat COVID vaccine. Ayatollah Khamenei thanked all those involved in producing the vaccine. He also criticized foreign nations for failing to fulfill their promises to provide vaccines to Iran. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has called on the international community to break its silence on Israeli violations of Lebanon's and Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity. In a statement, Hezbollah said the Israeli regime has repeatedly targeted Syrian positions, trespassing Lebanese airspace. It said the Israeli violations continue amid silence of international organizations and the so-called advocates of country's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Earlier this week, missiles fell on two regions in Lebanon while Israel was carrying out an attack on Syria's Homs province. The missiles caused material damage, but no casualties. Syria says its air defenses regularly intercept Israeli missiles. Hezbollah added that it stands by the affected people of Lebanon, stressing that the resistance is the only option against the Israeli plot and aggression. Mourners have laid to rest a Palestinian prisoner who was found dead in an Israeli jail in the city of Al-Quds Thursday. The funeral for Abdul Yusuf al-Khatib al-Tamimi was held at Al-Aqsa Mosque under conditions imposed by Israeli authorities. Palestinian media reports suggest that al-Tamimi succumbed to torture while in custody. They say Israeli prison staff severely beat him and used electric shock against him. Al-Tamimi's family has rejected Israeli officials' claim that he had died of a heart attack. He was among thousands of Palestinians languishing in Israeli prisons, many of them held without any charges. Rights groups say they are denied proper conditions and are subject to systemic torture. Israel is struggling to find a way to contain a deepening scandal caused by revelations that it helped repressive regimes in the region to spy on their critics. Such collaboration has been going on since 2016.
The Israeli regime is in hot water over a major scandal triggered by revelations that an Israeli-made spyware has been sold to some governments to target journalists, dissidents, and political leaders. Data leaked to an international alliance of news outlets shows the Pegasus spyware was sold to a group of countries, including the repressive regimes of Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates, which have notorious human rights records. It has been disclosed that Israel's Ministry of Military Affairs played an important role in choosing the customers that can buy the cutting-edge cyber spying tool. Some sources say Israeli authorities pushed for Saudi Arabia to be added to the list of customers that get the spyware. International pressure is mounting on Israel for enabling gross abuses by approving export licenses for the powerful spying tool to these states. Why was Tel Aviv so eager to make sure regimes like Saudi Arabia will have the sophisticated tool?
It helps them to control their countries. It helps to get them to be on the same side as Israel, because that's typically repressive regimes find Israel to be a, you can call it a good alliance, if you will. So this is what's happening, and it's happening now with the repressive Arab regimes in a way that it did not happen in the past.
U.S. media recently reported that Israel encouraged the technology company that developed Pegasus to continue to cooperate with the Saudis, even after it was revealed that the regime ordered and planned the gruesome assassination of outspoken journalist Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. The Israeli regime seems to be trying to control damage from the scandal. It has set up a task force to manage the fallout from the revelations amid an international outcry.
Iranian citizens throughout the years.
NSO Group's Pegasus software can hack into iPhones and Android devices and can extract every type of information, including messages, photos, and videos. A total of 50,000 phone numbers are believed to have been targeted by operators of the spyware since 2016. In the next report, we'll tell you about some of the prominent targets of the spying tool in the Persian Gulf region.
Investigations show that the Israeli spyware has been used against prominent activists, journalists, politicians, dissidents, or those close to them. A case in point is Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi, who was killed and dismembered in Saudi Arabia's consulate in Istanbul. The mobile phones of a number of people close to him, including his wife, were allegedly hacked into by a Pegasus operator. A close friend of Khashoggi, who was the ex-director general of the Qatar-based Al Jazeera network, is believed to have been targeted. Meanwhile, outspoken Saudi women's rights activist Lujain Al-Hathloul was apparently another victim. The Guardian says she was selected for possible hacking by Pegasus just weeks before she was arrested in the UAE in 2018 and then forcibly returned to the autocratic kingdom. Meanwhile, an investigation suggests that Princess Latifa, who was running from her father, the ruler of Dubai, was captured in 2018 using the Israeli phone hacking spyware Pegasus. The Washington Post reports that phone numbers of friends and associates of the princess were on the long list of phone numbers of people believed to have been targeted using the spyware. Israeli authorities seem to be having a tough time trying to contain the scandal, as major Western media outlets are involved in revealing the details. Israel, with its top-end surveillance capabilities, has always been a major player in the spying world. Many observers believe the revelation suggests that the regime will not hesitate to share experience and technology in the field with governments that it wants to be friendly with.
The Afghan government has rejected the Taliban's claim of controlling 90% of the country's border. The government said the claim is an absolute lie and baseless propaganda. The reaction came after a Taliban spokesman told Russian media that the group is now in control of frontiers with Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Iran. Taliban militants stepped up their attacks in May, taking different areas across Afghanistan. The U.S. estimates that those areas extend to over half of Afghanistan's district centers. Earlier, Russia deployed infantry groups to a Tajik military base near the Afghan border. Moscow warned that it will counter the militants if they enter the territory of Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, or Kyrgyzstan. Mass evacuations are underway in central China as bad weather conditions affect millions there. Rescuers are using temporary bridges to evacuate 19,000 people in Henan province. Thousands more have already been transferred to safety. Henan has been hit by historic floods that have submerged swaths of land. The deluge has claimed 33 lives while trapping people for days without fresh food or water. Things are expected to get worse as Typhoon Infa is forecast to bring further torrential downpours to parts of Henan in the coming days. The typhoon has already hit southern Japan. It's due to make landfall on eastern China by next week. Monsoon rain-triggered floods and landslides have claimed dozens of lives in the western Indian state of Maharashtra. Officials say some 40 people also have gone missing after several landslides hit the Raigad district. The Navy and Air Forces have joined rescuers in their search for survivors and helped thousands of others who remain stranded. However, rescue operations are hampered due to submerged roads and flooded rivers. Hundreds of villages and towns have been left without electricity and drinking water as well. India's Meteorological Department has issued red alerts for several regions in the state, warning that the heavy rainfall will continue over the next few days. The World Health Organization has urged collaboration on investigating COVID-19's origin after China rejected the agency's plan for probe. A spokesman for the UN Health Agency said on Friday that all countries have the responsibility to work together and to work with the international body to investigate the origin of the virus that sparked the pandemic. The call by WHO comes a day after Beijing rejected WHO proposal to audit Chinese labs as a second phase of studies into the pandemic origin, calling it arrogant and disrespectful. This as a team from WHO conducted its probe earlier this year in the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the virus first emerged. The probe concluded that the virus probably came to humans from bats, not from a lab. And Iran has reported over 21,000 new COVID-19 infections in the last 24 hours, raising its total caseload to more than 3.6 million. The health ministry also confirmed 210 new fatalities, taking the death tally to over 88,000. Iran has been grappling with a new surge in infections and deaths over the past couple of weeks. The uptick is largely blamed on the highly contagious Delta strain. Over 230 cities are now designated as red, the highest level in the country's four-tier system of COVID restrictions. Stringent measures are in place in those cities to curb the spread of the virus. The capital, Tehran, and a nearby province have also been under a six-day lockdown, with only essential businesses allowed to stay open. Well, protests have been held in Naples during a G20 ministerial meeting on environment, climate, and energy. Protesters say they have zero trust in the same politicians who've delivered a disastrous transformation of the global socioeconomic system.
Environment and energy ministers from the group of 20 rich nations have gathered in Italy's southern city of Naples for a two-day summit on environment, energy, and climate change. The talks, chaired by Italy, which holds the rotating annual presidency of the G20, have reportedly been inconclusive so far, as officials are struggling to find common ground to put together joint statements on the topics being discussed. On Thursday, Naples saw a number of anti-G20 protests being staged in different parts of the city. In the morning, hundreds of protesters tried to break into the building where the meeting was taking place. Activists from the campaign group Avaaz, wearing masks depicting Argentinian soccer player Diego Armando Maradona, staged a protest calling for debt relief for developing countries.
People are sick and tired of being lied to. Once again, it looks like there will be a complete lack of any commitments and money. The richest countries are telling the poorest countries we need to protect the environment, and the poorest countries are saying we need money for that.
The largest anti-G20 rally was held on Thursday afternoon in the historic center of Naples. Thousands of people from all walks of life shouted slogans against corporate greed and the influence on governments, and in support of a counter G20 summit. Speaking at the G20 ministerial meeting, Italian Ecological Transition Minister Roberto Cingolani said everyone wants to be green without making the necessary sacrifices. The minister added that if the financial system won't change in favor of sustainable development, there will be catastrophic consequences for future generations.
The Naples G20 meeting is seen as a key intermediate stage ahead of global climate talks known as COP26, UN Climate Change Conference. The meeting is to be held in Glasgow, UK, in November. Max Civili, Rome.
EU environment ministers say recent floods in Western Europe and extreme weather events around the globe must act as a wake-up call. Activists say the 27 country bloc's climate change goals are not ambitious enough. Jerome Humes reports.
The cleanup operation continues in Belgium and Germany, the countries worst affected by last week's devastating floods following torrential rainfall. Senior figures from the European Commission have just attended a meeting of EU environment ministers.
50 degrees northwest Canada, 40 degrees in Siberia, 40 degrees in Central Europe, the floods you've mentioned, droughts agriculture is dealing with, wildfires.
Last week, the European Commission unveiled plans to cut greenhouse gas emissions in the 27-nation bloc by 55% over the next 9 years. The Commission claims it's a matter of life and death.
The infernos and hurricanes we have seen over the last few weeks are only a very small window into what our future could look like.
Environmentalists point to what's happening right now. Raging wildfires in parts of the United States and Canada, severe flooding in regions of China, crippling droughts in areas of Iran, recent tornadoes in the Czech Republic. In order to save the planet, campaigners insist the EU must cooperate with big powers like Russia, China and Iran instead of pushing them away.
Official data shows transport accounts for 29% of pollution in the EU, but one large ship generates as much carbon dioxide per day as 80,000 cars. Of course, the aviation industry is another major player, and so too is agriculture. Experts say the key is to cut our energy consumption and be more efficient.
Therefore, what energy a country uses, what sources, what does it burn? Does it burn coal? Does it burn gas, which has half the emissions of coal? Or does it do renewables, carbon-free sources? This is tremendously important for climate change.
Environmental groups say the EU needs to move faster and claims the bloc's goals are simply not ambitious enough. They are demanding that leaders agree on decisive action when they meet at a major UN climate change conference scheduled for October in Glasgow, Scotland. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Life and personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Month of Wilaya from IRIB English Radio. Sayyid Ali al-Musavi al-Jazairi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahi ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm so happy and glad to be with you one more time. Ya Ali, ana wa anta abawa hadhihi al-ummah. The Holy Messenger, addressing Ali ibn Abi Talib, has said, O Ali, you and I are the parents of this nation. This statement is narrated in the famous and well-accepted interpretative book of Ruh al-Ma'ani, authored by Shahabuddin al-Alusi, this authentic Sunni scholar among Ahlul Sunnah and the jurisconsult of Hanafi school in the 13th century after Hijrah. Ana wa Aliyun abawa hadhihi al-ummah, the Holy Messenger of God said, Ali and I are the parents of this nation. This statement is widely transmitted by different Shia authorities like al-Shaykh al-Saduq in his different books like Ilal al-Shara'i' wa Uyun Akhbar al-Rida, may God's peace and blessings be upon him. Al-Hakim al-Haskani, in his famous book of al-Shawahid al-Tanzil, which is an irrational interpretation of the Holy Quran, when reaches the third ayah of Surah Al-Balad, bringing up a complete chain of transmitters, mention a narration from our fifth infallible Imam, Al-Imam Al-Baqir, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, the fourth descendant of the Holy Prophet of Islam. The ayah is this, وَوَالِدٍ وَمَا وَلَدْ, I swear by the Father and him whom he begot, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says. Al-Imam Al-Baqir, interpreting this ayah, has said, Al-Walid Amir al-Mu'mineen wa ma walad al-Hasan wal-Husayn. In this ayah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has meant by Walid, the commander of the faithful, and he has meant by those whom he begot, his two sons, al-Hasan wal-Husayn, may God's peace and blessings be upon them. Inshallah, within these episodes that I'm honored to be with you, I'm going to take only a handful of the infinite ocean of the commander of the faithful merits and virtues and perfections in order to quench the thirst of our hearts and spirits as much as we have capacity for. I'm going to just focus on one of the most fundamental and prominent figures and qualities of God's prophets and apostles and their divinely designated successors, and in particular, the first inheritor and successor of the last messenger of God, the commander of the faithful, Amir al-Mu'minin, Ali ibn Abi Talib, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, to speak about. I want to speak about the position of the divine guardianship and rulership and authority and direction that God's apostles and messengers and their divinely designated successors had and have over the worshippers of God. And I mean by this position, the position of the divine authority and guardianship over the believers, specifically maqam al-wilayah, exactly in accordance with the meaning that has been meant by this word and its derivatives in the ayat of the Holy Quran and within the prophetic narrations that have been transmitted to us. What is the essence and the meaning of this position, the position of the divine wilayah and authority? What is the meaning of the words of wali and mawla that are derived from the same root of wilayah? What qualifications and elements are required for someone to deserve the position of this wilayah and authority over the believers and the faithful? Considering these elements and qualifications, can we come to this conclusion that this is the right of the people to sit together and then agree upon someone in order to grant him the position of this wilayah and choose him as their wali and mawla in order to submit to him and obey his rules and regulations? Or considering these qualifications and elements, we have to arrive at this conclusion that this position is a divine and heavenly position whose instance should be exclusively appointed and designated and then introduced by God himself? Are these qualifications and elements such apparent and exoteric criterions that could be recognized by ordinary, typical human beings, or they are such esoteric internal criterions whose recognition of is only possible and accessible for God himself and those extraordinary humans that are connected to the source of the pure knowledge and awareness and are aware of the unseen? It's narrated in the book of Yanabi' al-Mawaddah, authored by this Sunni Hanafi scholar, Sulaiman ibn Ibrahim al-Qunduzi, that the Messenger of God, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, addressing Ali ibn Abi Talib, has said, Ya Ali, Anta mawla man ana mawla, wa ana mawla kull mu'minin wa mu'mina. O Ali, you are the master of all those of whom I'm a master, and I'm the master of all faithful men and women. What is the secret behind the fact that the Holy Prophet employs the title of Wali and Mawla, firstly describing himself and secondly describing the commander of the faithful? Why this title of Mawla has never been employed by the Holy Prophet to describe any other companions of his? Inshallah, I'm going to answer these fundamental questions through a brief commentary over the precious traditions and narrations that I recited for you at the beginning of this program. Ana wa Aliyun abawa hadhihi al-ummah. Ali and I are the parents of this nation, the Holy Messenger of God said. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Uyghur people.
Surfside Tragedy.
An incessantly rising death toll in the wake of a horrendous collapse. A tragedy combined with a quest for accountability and a boost in infrastructure. Nearly 100 people have died after a 12-story beachfront condominium in the Miami suburb of Surfside, Florida, collapsed, causing shockwave among the United States' communities.
Lucia was always super, energetic and loving. She was a friend to the entire class.
Late tonight, Lucia and her younger sister, Emma, were confirmed among the victims, along with their father, Marcus Guara, identified earlier. But their mother, Anna, is still missing.
After this happened, it has brought a ton of my friends and a lot of my family closer together, because you really do have to cherish every breath, because you never know when it could be your last.
Hello and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Mila Javamardi, and in this episode, we try to get to the bottom of what happened there, what the families of the victims are going through, and really, who is to blame. In this show, we also take a look at the other incidents, such as flooding in New York City stations, and investigate whether a pattern is emerging when it comes to the U.S. infrastructure. Thank you for staying with us.
Despite what many people think, this building was screaming for years about its symptoms and about what was impending doom. And countless individuals and entities knew about this. Although they didn't appreciate it, they knew, as I just mentioned a moment ago, about the symptoms, including engineering firms, the association, and even the neighboring properties knew quite well that there were significant cracks, that this building was losing height.
The search and rescue operation following a deadly condo collapse in Surfside, Florida, is painstakingly slow, and still more than 20 people remain listed as missing, their bodies not yet recovered. On the other hand, a damaged but standing section of the condo turned into a prison for those who live there. The authorities decided to demolish that portion of the building 11 days later as a hurricane was about to make landfall in northern Florida.
The concern initially with that building still standing is that if there's a secondary collapse or there's a shift in that structure, there was still significant debris hanging over our heads, and it was too risky, and things were constantly falling, that if one small piece of brick falls from that height, it'll kill a first responder.
Did you have a moment where you felt the clear and present danger to yourself and your teams?
Well, I think still, there's still significant dangers out there. There's plenty of rebar sticking out. We're using heavy machinery. We're using saws that can easily cut through somebody. So we have to do it safely as possible, but understand there's risk. The whole time we've been here, there's going to be risks. And, we want to operate as safely as possible, but we understand that there's also risk involved with this.
As many remain unaccounted for, the families' suffering looks unlikely to abate. The search operation kicked off after the collapse on the remaining pile of rubble, where rescue workers kept peeling layers of debris, mostly to find dead bodies. Our first guest is author and attorney Michael Springman. Welcome to the program, sir. Who is indeed responsible for the deadly building collapse in Surfside, Miami?
Well, the blame can be spread far and wide. You've got the people and the Miami-Dade area governments who issued building permits and failed to inspect them properly, failed to investigate what was really going on in the construction of the building. You've got the structural engineers who designed it, and you got the condominium itself who failed to heed the warnings of their own inspectors 3 years ago. You've got a condominium board that was taking in $1 million a year in condo fees, but failed to apply them to the building.
Many thanks, Michael. We'll hear more of your analysis later on in the program.
It is difficult to say when the bodies of all victims of this tragedy will be recovered. but the authorities hope to conclude their painstaking work in the coming weeks. The search and recovery effort at the collapsed Champlain Towers South is set to continue for a while. An investigation is also crucial to get to the root cause of the deadly incident. The authorities are launching a grand jury investigation, and at least 6 lawsuits have been filed by the families of the victims.
I heard a noise, and to me it was like a thunder. I went to the window to see what happened. When I opened the balcony window, it was a lot of dust. Then I realized it was not raining. I closed the door, and when I was coming in, I heard a tremendous noise, and the apartment moved violently. So I went to the bedroom, pick up a flashlight. In the way out, I have my purse in the table next to the door, and I just grabbed my purse and I went out. When I opened the door, all the hallway was full of dust and was nobody there anymore.
The families of the victims are taking legal actions. As lawsuits pile up, the families are hoping to get their hands on any information that can explain the cause for the deadly Champlain Towers South condo building collapse, or any person or entity that might bear some responsibility. We're now joined by academic and commentator Paul Sheldon Foots to investigate the issue further. Sir, let me ask you this. What does the huge collapse of such a building say about infrastructure and policies related to it in the United States?
This is an old story in America. When Obama became president, he said, "I have shovel-ready projects to go." He was a Democrat. The Senate and the House were Democrats. You show me the achievements that happened during those first 2 years. Nothing. Everyone in America agrees we have desperate needs to improve our infrastructure. However, you had the Democrats who want to propose huge sums of money on things that have nothing to do with infrastructure.
The deadly collapse turned into a political issue soon after it transpired that the authorities' negligence played a major role in the catastrophe. A Maryland-based consultant found evidence of a failing concrete slab and abundant cracking and crumbling to an underground parking garage during a 2018 inspection of the building and recommended repair work that was never carried out. The consultant submitted a 2018 report which ominously warned, "The failed waterproofing is causing major structural damage to the concrete structural slab below these areas. Failure to replace the waterproofing in the near future will cause the extent of the concrete deterioration to expand exponentially." A subsequent report earlier this year corroborated the poor conditions, suggesting that the probability of a collapse had increased.
Okay, so now I've slowed it down for you and enhanced the video as best I could. And what we're looking at here, this is the gate on the ramp that leads down below grade into the garage. So what you're seeing is a water pipe hanging down that's just gushing huge amounts of water. But look all over the ramp, you're seeing huge chunks of concrete, that's what it looks like, that may have fallen off of the ceiling or other columns. So what you were looking at right there, folks, is the collapsed pool deck that came down on top of the garage, and it ripped down probably the sprinkler pipe.
Yet the authorities took no action, and their negligence cost so many lives and resulted in this terrible tragedy. What are the demands of the victims today, and what should the authorities do after such a tragedy?
Well, the people involved in the collapse of the buildings, their friends, their relatives, and so on, are demanding justice and are expressing a great deal of anger and want an explanation as to what's happening. The government's responsibility, of course, is that they failed to initially oversee the construction properly and with the proper permits and the proper inspections. And now it's up to them to do a real, decent, detailed investigation of who is responsible and what was done and what was failed to be done. And I hope that they will finally get enough pressure to do a decent investigation.
While repairs had not begun immediately after the 2018 report, has its roots in the political power play rampant in America at all governmental, state, and local levels. An association that used to operate the building simply argues that the report had not warned of an actual collapse, and had they known such a disaster was about to happen, they would definitely take action to prevent it sooner.
So you see how just by knowing the layout here of the garage and where she's going, we're starting to map out where all the water damage was and where all of the leaks appear to be. Okay, so she's standing in the... This is right over the main driving area right in front of Space 53, looks like. And just look how you have stalactites forming here. I don't even know what these, if these are bolts or if they were bent rebar or what, or if there was something here at some other point in time. I can't even tell what that is. It's just, it's not really clear enough. But this is clear enough. You can see the exposed rebar right there.
The Surfside incident certainly highlights the aging and poor to mediocre condition of the country's infrastructure in general. For example, over 42% of the 617,000 bridges in the United States are more than 50 years old, according to the Infrastructure Report card.
And you have many politicians who want to spend money on worthless projects. So we joke about the bridge to nowhere, or putting in a train line that goes to the hometown of a member of Congress or something. Even on the projects that they agree upon tend to be very wasteful. And so we're in a terrible situation. The American infrastructure continues to deteriorate, and yet you have this massive game playing among politicians who have no trouble spending trillions of dollars on endless wars and weakening America and not spending money on real infrastructure projects.
The rather decrepit infrastructure and decades of negligence in specific sectors are not without consequences. Take what happened in New York City when heavy downpours fell recently. The most populous city in the United States, New York City, has a notorious flaw in its subway system.
The century-old subway is not only vulnerable to heavy rains, because even in a dry year, as nearly as 50,000 cubic meters of water has to be pumped out due to frequent leakages. The subway system is based on stopping streams of spring water to zigzag under the city, and also surrounded by the groundwater that runs beneath the whole city. And there are the people who have to commute every day.
In some areas, you're going to have lots of empty houses that nobody wants. And in other areas, you're going to have people scrambling to try to move into new areas and find that they have to commute long distances to get to work, for example. What the Biden administration proposes to do about that, I haven't seen anything yet of any value about what they could possibly do. You have the private sector housing corporations building as fast as they can. From the standpoint of what they could ever do in the public sector, I haven't seen anything.
Recurrence of incidents such as the recent Surfside tragedy or the NYC subway flooding presents a clear indication that the U.S. has a serious infrastructure problem. Experts estimate that trillions of dollars are required to address issues with America's crumbling backbone.
Would it be worth spending the millions of dollars in infrastructure improvements to deal with these rare flooding events?
Absolutely not. Because the cost of repair would be much less than the cost of investment, and the subway needs so much other investment.
And in worst-case scenarios like yesterday, the MTA should simply close the stations quickly until the water recedes.
The subway still has to address cleaning up, addressing this, figuring out what's going to happen next time, and just hoping that these 3-inch-an-hour rains don't come more than once a summer.
The gradual decaying of public service facilities is just a natural phenomenon bound to happen unless the authorities regularly observe the status of infrastructure, report issues, and get proportionate funding in return. But in many cases, like the New York City subway, the problems are fundamental as structures have not been properly designed and originally well built in the first place. Their houses are no exception.
Housing is very difficult because of economic shifts. With the pandemic, for example, we've had large numbers of people deciding that they want to live in small areas and work online. There's been a lot of movement to smaller areas away from the big cities, for example. You have people frequently moving around the country to different states for job openings. So it is really difficult to anticipate all the housing needs and where they'll be overnight.
The American Society of Civil Engineers has given the U.S. infrastructure a C grade. Preventing such a tragedy from happening again involves comprehensive overhaul in the country's infrastructure, as well as the way it treats nature. Meanwhile, the families remain resilient in their calls for an answer, and they demand accountability, as the U.S. President Joe Biden put it himself.
When the accident took my wife and my family, the hardest part was, were my boys going to get out? Were they going to make it? And not knowing. When you're flying home from Washington, you get the news, you know, you just don't know. So but I was amazed. As you know, unfortunately, I've done a lot of these circumstances where I've met with families who have had great loss. And what amazed me about this group of people was their resilience, their absolute commitment, their willingness to do whatever it took to find an answer.
With sea levels rising, inspectors failing to carry out tougher reviews, and loose building codes, the probability of surfside-like collapses rise. The significance of the money surrounding the issue could be traced back to the power struggle between Democrats and Republicans, ensuing President Biden's infrastructure plan worth trillions of dollars. How do you think the government and the states could prevent catastrophes such as the surfside collapse from happening again?
Simply much more supervision, much more control over permits, much more control over the kinds of companies and the experience and the equipment and the actual workmen involved. Do they have the capabilities to do this? Are they doing it safely? Are they doing it according to the rules and regulations and county permits and building codes? And they've got to be a lot tougher on inspections. The Americans have been more interested in wars around the world than actual examination and repair of their own failing infrastructure.
U.S. authorities need to get their act together to address weaknesses in planning, coordination, and financing with regards to infrastructure. But in reality, the infrastructure plan proposed by President Biden has come under harsh criticism by Republicans, who argue that it is a vehicle to promote a radical left agenda.
Infrastructure, which is debate, but the details involve more money for electric cars than for most projects that most of us consider infrastructure. And of course, a massive tax increase, undoing the 2017 tax bill, which produced the biggest, best economy in 50 years as recently as February of 2020. Or a bill styled as voting rights, which in fact is a carefully designed plan for the Democrats to take over all of American elections all across the country.
Democrats in Congress reached a compromise on an infrastructure plan so as to brand it as a bipartisan initiative. But they are also planning to pass a much bigger package with no Republican support. That has widened the rift between the aisles, prompting a response from former President Trump. He has called on Republicans not to be played by Biden's tricks to advance the liberal agenda.
there are huge differences in what you get for your money as you go around in different parts of the country. In terms of that, in terms of safety, the regulation of the building is done locally in politics. It depends very much on how strict and how honest the governmental regulatory bodies are in dealing with this. And so you can see huge differences. You can see some really shoddy situations.
The victims of inadequate investment and poor maintenance of infrastructure are the average people. And like myriad other phenomena, a broken infrastructure does not impact all sections of the community equally. While everyone uses it, deficiencies in infrastructure primarily affect the poor and the disadvantaged, much more so than the well-off sections of the community. The economic and social impact on the poor is much more pronounced.
Our budget goes on rent and food, anything that's not covered by health insurance.
Let me take this shirt off. You got another one on.
Clothing is a big thing for five kids.
Yeah.
It's a program. They help out a lot with healthy food. Then you can get some vouchers with them. Beans, cheese, milk.
I cook a lot of spaghetti because it usually lasts longer.
Experts argue that poor infrastructure leads to fewer jobs and lower incomes. It also restructures the economy to lower paying jobs as the demand rises for workforce needed to address issues related to infrastructure. Research has meanwhile proven that the application of projects such as bridges, roads, communication, sewage and electricity systems directly contribute to a reduction in poverty. Well, that was our show. I'm your host, Mila Javamardi. Join us again next week on We the People.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.